Hello everyone, this is Tom Fox, and I'd like to welcome you to episode 34 of the FCPA Compliance and Ethics Report. Today I want to look at an opinion release that came out at the end of 2013, that being opinion release 1301. This was the only opinion release from a calendar year 1301, and as with many opinion releases, it had a lot of very good information in it. The opinion release procedure is a process that is written into the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act itself. It allows companies to submit questions, hypothetical questions, or questions about actions moving forward and get the Department of Justice to opine on whether or not it believes under the facts and circumstances that are presented to it, it would constitute an FCPA violation such that the department would institute proceedings or prosecute a company for it. It is a rarely used procedure, but it's one that I found of high value for the companies involved and high value for the compliance practitioner out there. I say it's high value for the companies involved because you can submit some pretty sophisticated questions to the Department of Justice and get some answers that provide really solid guidance for the actions that you want to take. For instance, and I would add that for the compliance practitioner going forward, it can provide a lot of very good information about things that you can incorporate into your compliance practice at your company or compliance program at your company. If you have ever been to a FCPA event where a DOJ representative has spoken, you will hear them continually say that each case stands on its own facts. Each case must be evaluated on its own facts. This can seemingly be frustrating for a non-lawyer, but as a lawyer, certainly sounds reasonable to me. Nevertheless, I believe in the opinion release procedure, there are some broad brush strokes rather, that you can glean from the guidance that the Department of Justice gives. There have been several noteworthy ones that are quoted often in the compliance field. The one that comes to mind is 0802, also known as the Halliburton Opinion Release. This one dealt with post-acquisition integration and investigation after a proposed merger. In that opinion release, Halliburton was looking at buying a UK company, and due to some peculiar UK laws, they had a very limited amount of information they could look at, particularly in the realm of third-party agents that this company utilized on its sales side. Because they were not able to make an accurate assessment prior to the proposed merger, the company really didn't feel like it had adequate information to go forward. To help alleviate some of these questions, or more appropriately, some of the potential liability that Halliburton did not have an appreciation of what it might be looking at, they submitted a proposed post-acquisition investigation and remediation to the Department of Justice. This was they presented a very aggressive post-acquisition investigation where they would look at high-risk agents or agents in high-risk countries within 30 days and report back to the Department of Justice, medium-risk agents within 60 days, and low-risk agents within 90 days. If you've ever worked in the corporate world, you understand that that's a very aggressive time frame. Nevertheless, because Halliburton was not able to look at significant or enough documents prior to the proposed merger to make a determination as to whether this company had engaged in conduct which would violate the FCPA going forward, where the company had never been subject to the FCPA, it had a very aggressive plan, and this was approved by the Department of Justice. Many in the compliance field have cited back to the Halliburton opinion release as the type of thing that you could do post-acquisition to try to insulate your company from FCPA liability. One of the keys for me, though, in the Halliburton opinion release, and it shows that the Department of Justice is open to new ideas, new arguments, new ways to go about making a determination of detection, prevention, and remediation for a compliance program. In other words, the Department of Justice will respond to creative lawyering. This is something that I don't think is really talked about enough in the compliance field, but in any area of the law, there's always room for good lawyering, as we say in Texas, and I think the opinion release procedure really points to that. Second one of note was 0-12-02, which in that case, a company wanted to use a royal family member as an agent to lobby the country's government here in the United States. If you had asked me if a royal family member was a foreign governmental official prior to this opinion release 100 times, I would have told you 100 times that a royal family member is always a governmental official. And you can never hire one to lobby a government. Nevertheless, because of the facts, specific facts and circumstances presented in this opinion release, it allowed an analysis of twofold analysis of not only who is a governmental official, but then what are their duties going forward and what are the duties you want to hire them for. So it provided a level of analysis that had not previously been thought about too deeply in the compliance community. But once again, it showed an excellent example of creative lawyering. I don't know who came up with those arguments. I don't know if that was the Department of Justice, but most probably it was the company submitting information to the Department of Justice. So once again, room for creative lawyering going forward. And I think that's one of the things that you need to take away from Opinion Release 1301, which is, once again, there is room for creative lawyering. Under the facts of 1301, we have the situation where a partner in a law firm was the requestor, meaning the person who requested the information in the opinion release. This law firm does business with a foreign government and had represented them on several international arbitrations, apparently very large matters to the tune of several million-dollar fees over the past couple of years in anticipation of multi-million-dollar fees going forward. Through this work for the foreign government and the representation of this foreign government, an individual partner at this law firm, the requestor, had become good friends with one of the members of the foreign government's Office of Attorney General staff. This foreign governmental official who worked in the Office of Attorney General has a daughter with a medical condition that cannot be treated successfully in the foreign government's home country. And apparently, or at least according to the opinion release, there was no country nearby which could provide the necessary medical treatment for this foreign official's daughter's medical condition. Neither the foreign official nor the daughter nor the medical condition were identified in the opinion release. So what the requestor, the partner in this law firm, wanted to do was pay for this foreign governmental official's daughter's medical treatment. In other words, provide humanitarian aid. The department looked at the facts and circumstances of this and found several things which led to an eventual ruling that the proposed payment would not violate the FCPA, and the department would take no action against the requestor nor the law firm. So what are some of the factors that were dispositive or at least persuasive to the Department of Justice? Well, first of all, this foreign governmental official, although he was clearly identified as a foreign governmental official, was not a person who could send business or direct business or retain business for the law firm. Although he had worked on the had worked on the matters with the law firm, he was not someone who made the decision to hire the law firm. The law firm in question indicated that they had believed they would receive additional work from the foreign government because of the success they had had in prior legal work, which if you've ever represented a client, you know that clients typically like to go back to people who win for them, whether those wins are in the courtroom, in arbitration, or on a contract. So it's not too surprising that if a law firm had had success with a client, they would continue to represent that client going forward. But for this individual who had the daughter with a medical condition, he was not involved in either the decision to obtain or retain business for the law firm or directing business to this law firm. Secondly, there was full transparency for the actions. And by full transparency, I mean the partner in the law firm went to his law firm and told them what he wanted to do, laid it out in writing for them. But more importantly, and interestingly, he also went to the Attorney General's office of the foreign country in question and proposed to do this and secured a legal opinion indicating that such conduct was not a violation of that country's anti-bribery or anti-corruption laws. So here we have not really a local law defense, but you had a legal opinion from the Attorney General of the country in question saying that this proposed humanitarian aid would not violate the FCPA. In addition to having this legal opinion, this also had the added benefit of giving full transparency to the actions in question. So this was not something that was being hidden by either the partner of the law firm in question nor the foreign official involved. So full transparency by all parties. And this is something that also I don't really think gets the amount of play that it should, which is when you make a gift, when you make a donation, when you give something of value, the more transparency you have, the more you let the light of day in and shine on it, it is going to go a long way towards showing no corrupt intent. Remember, the FCPA, under the FCPA, you have to have corrupt intent. And if you hide something, if you don't make it known to the foreign government involved or even the people who work with or for the foreign official who's receiving the gift, the humanitarian aid or other, and or you hide those in your books and records by incorrectly describing it, it goes a long way towards showing a corrupt intent. So if you make a charitable donation and you call it a marketing expense, that's pretty good indicia that you were trying to hide it. And that's where some U.S. companies have gotten into trouble on their charitable donation front, particularly Sharing Plow and Lilly in Poland got into trouble for that. So the full transparency was involved. Taking a page from travel expenses under the FCPA, the requestor indicated that they would be making direct payment to the third-party providers, here the hospital and doctors in the country where the treatment for the foreign official's daughter would be provided. So much as you would going forward if you were bringing foreign officials to the United States and you would pay directly the service providers you use, the hotel, any restaurants that you sent them to, and if you were providing transportation, it's best practices to pay the third-party service providers directly. Here we have the requestor doing the same, and I think this is something that also is an important factor that certainly was set out in the opinion release. The based on all of these factors, the department found that it would not consider this to be an FCPA violation and would not bring any proceedings against any of the parties involved, either the specific partner at the law firm in question, nor indeed the law firm. So what are some of the lessons that you should draw and can draw from this? I've written extensively and talked extensively about charitable donations and some of the general guidelines for charitable donation are found in this opinion release. First of all, the transparency element. So once again, something that's not really discussed, but clearly important. If you work with a foreign government to make a donation, make sure that they know you're making that donation. If you're creating a monetary incentive to get the foreign government employees to enforce certain laws, make sure that that's transparent. Make sure that the foreign government is part of your plan going forward. Make sure that they understand and to the extent they can administer the program so that it looks like and it appears that the foreign government's involved in making any awards. Clearly, paying third-party service providers directly is a key, so that if you're going to build a school, if you're going to build a hospital, if you're going to build a landing strip, whatever your humanitarian goals might be, or indeed your corporate social responsibility goals might be. Say you want to build a road. A big believer in building highways for countries to bring equipment in. They can use those highways long after your energy company leaves. But the key there is to pay those third-party service providers directly. Also, having the Attorney General of the country involved in issuing a legal opinion that the humanitarian aid sought did not violate any gifts, entertainment, or indeed any criminal laws in the country in question, I think is critical. Once again, many companies do not seek to have that extra step. They may get an opinion, they may look at the law, but here you have the foreign government involved affirmatively stating that there is no violation of law. Once again, it's no local law defense, but it's almost that strong, where you have the country in question indicating that they do not believe and they will not prosecute the recipient of the humanitarian aid. So these are some of the factors that I think you need to think about, and this opinion release gives you some cover to think through how you need to structure your charitable donations. And I would argue your if you want to move into a CSR, a corporate social responsibility analysis, where you're doing things on a broader scale. Say your company either wants to or indeed even has been asked to help provide things like angel startup funding money for local businesses, training for local businesses, not simply for the mechanical ability to do a job as a contractor or subcontractor, but say you want to train them so that they can run a business in a multifaceted international business context. So you need to bring them to the United States for technical training here and training on how to operate ERP systems. What are the best ways? What if you want to train them on SAP? Should you send them to Germany? Can you send them to Germany? Can you bring them here? I think all of these things now, if with the analysis that Opinion Release 1301 has given us, this realm of CSR and indeed charitable donations is opened up much broader and much wider, and there's much more room for creativity. And that's something that is typically not talked about and discussed enough, I think, which is why I started with it, creative lawyering. It's important to have that, and you can still do that in the compliance perspective. And then let's get back to the light, the sunshine and the light of day, which is the transparency. Here we had transparency on both sides. We had transparency by the donor, the specific partner at the law firm who's making the charitable contribution. We had transparency by his employer, the law firm. We had transparency with the foreign governmental official involved. And we had transparency with the foreign government. Not only did the Office of the Attorney General in the country in question know that this donation had been proposed, or humanitarian aid had been proposed, but it also recognized because of the legal opinion generated. So I think that's not something that gets a lot of play, but the light of day shining in on something not only gets the rats scurrying away because there are no shadows for them to hide, but it adds to the lack of corrupt intent. And once again, the FCPA requires corrupt intent. So it's something that if you can make a dislink, one of my favorite words when it comes to charitable donations under the FCPA, if you can unlink the donation or the humanitarian aid from any contract retention, obtaining business going forward, I think there is a situation where full transparency is a demonstrable step that will help you going forward. So I've written about this. If you need a copy of Opinion Release 1301, you can send me an email at tfox@tfoxlaw.com. I'm happy to forward that to you and anything I may have written up about it. I've got an article coming out about it on in Compliance Week in their March issue. So if you take the Compliance Week magazine or subscribe to it on an e-basis, you should be able to get it there as well. So once again, thank you very much for listening, and I look forward to visiting with you again. Thank you.